14, and then you're still. Got it?
Yep, we are recording now.
Okay.
All right, I assume everyone has a copy of the minute. Are there any comments to the minute that need to be made before we vote on?
I will be paying it.
I will entertain a motion to approve the minute.
Who made the motion to approve?
Ms. Newberry.
Thank you.
Vicki, second.
Is there a second? Please say your name.
Vicki Malloy.
Okay, then I understand we have a motion and a second to approve the minute. There's no discussion, everyone can take a vote. Call out your name and your vote, please.
Ms. Newberry, aye.
George McDevitt, aye.
Vicki, aye.
Greg Becker, abstain.
Tom Blum, abstain.
James Wade, aye.
Is that everybody? I have got the track.
Yes, yes, it is. Unless, we just heard a ding. Did somebody else join the meeting?
That was me, yes.
Oh, okay, that's Kirsten.
Okay, so do we have a majority on that?
We have four in favor of, and then, no, we don't have a majority. We have two abstentions, Carl and Greg.
They can vote.
I wasn't at the meeting either, sorry.
You can still vote on it. You just can't make the motion.
All right, this is Greg. I'll vote yay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll vote yay then.
Okay.
Okay, so the minutes have been approved. Next order of business is any public comment. Was there anybody that showed up from the public to the officer?
There is nobody here.
Okay, I understand there's no old business. If that is the case, we'll move on to new business. And essentially, this is the hearing on CPA 2020-002 comprehensive plan, map amended for CIP amended project. We'll open the hearing for that. Is there any comments? I guess we have no public comment. Would you heard like to make any comments, have any questions about that?
Yeah, this is Greg. I have a couple of comments today. I see these projected impacts, one for the only gardens that expansion land searches, and of course also the capital improvement. These are federated funds, these two funds, and I'm really questioning whether or not these, whether or not these are really gonna be accurate considering the shutdown in the economy, the slowdown in the housing market, and we have no idea when this is gonna turn around, and I'm really questioning whether or not this projected income is realistic.
I can answer that. This is Kathy Mulhall. And the REIT II funds that we are putting in 2020 are already here in the bank. So it's not on what we're projecting to get, it's actually what we already have here. So these projects already have funding here.
Okay. The next question I have is, the economy, whether or not we have the money at this time, is it really imperative or really that important at this time to expand Home and Garden? Because of the fact that, you know, it's just gonna be, feel like the money may be there to go out and make a land purchase, and I'm just questioning whether or not this is the time to do it, or this is something that should be delayed till next year, once we see how everything is. Even though the money is there, it doesn't necessarily need to be expensive.
And this is Kathy Mulhall again, and the purchase is, it's available now, and it would not be available next year.
Ms. Newberry, you have a question for the funds tied to the purchase?
Yes, we're adding the purchase of property to the plan, and then the funds would are in the REIT II account right now to purchase the property.
But my question is, are they earmarked for that? Is that the only place they can spend at this point?
Not necessarily. I mean, they could be spent on other projects in other years.
But if designated in the plan, that then once it's designated for...
Once we designate these dollars in the plan, they will be spent on that for that purchase.
Yes. But right now, they're sitting in an account, and they are not earmarked for anything in specific.
Well, I put in a clarification, and this is great again. If they're not earmarked for the development expansion, I got the impression that you said they were earmarked for that, and the money was there, and obviously the land is available now, but not later, so... Is it earmarked for the land purchase, or is it not earmarked for the land purchase?
When you pass this or recommend this CIP, then it will be earmarked. The funds are available. They are not earmarked for that project until the project gets on the list. And so that's what this action will do. We'll put the project on the list.
Well, what is the need? What's the identified need for the expansion of...
We have that in our overall plan for Omni Gardens was to purchase surrounding property when they became available, and we have a property that has become available.
How many acres is the property?
I don't have that information.
So really, at this point, we don't know how much we're paying per acre for that property, whether it's a price that makes sense, whether it's an exaggerated price because the buyer knows the county has interest in it.
It is actually, I'm gonna put on a different hat here as the assessor and tell you that the purchase price of the property is below assessed value currently.
The county can only pay what the value is, so we have had the property appraised, and the property deal will be less than the appraised value.
Why is the buyer willing to sell it below market value?
Because they would like for the county to own it.
I see.
This is Jim Newberry, and if this has already been approved, and you say that everything seems kosher, otherwise it would not go through.
Yeah, one thing
that... Kevin, I agree with that. My point, this is Jim Newberry again. My point is, it's not a new thing. It's something that was okay to approve before, and now the funds available. So that's different than it just being a new idea or something like that.
Okay, but I would still like to know, and I don't know if anybody answers, but what is the identified need?
Greg, I'd just like to put my input in. When the county goes through with something like this, they've done a lot of research leading up to it. If there's land that's available around in the garden, it would be much preferred that we be able to purchase it so that it doesn't hold the count and then it stops any expansion in the future. I know all of these things are analyzed very seriously and approved before it even comes through here. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it makes sense, but if the analysis is so thorough, there ought to be the ability to explain thoroughly the need.
Well,
is it only garden not data or what?
Well, hopefully this can shed some light on it. So, it's not that the plan to expand Omni Gardens is on the table right now. The problem is there are, there is a future desire to expand Omi Gardens, but that only can happen if the property surrounding it right now, when it comes up for sale, is available to be purchased by the county. If we don't purchase it when it becomes available, we have lost our opportunity because it will go into private ownership or stay in private ownership, and the potential for development would prevent any expansion in the future of Omi Gardens. So it's kind of strike while the iron is hot. This may be our only opportunity because it has not been for sale for the last, the same family's owned it for 100 years.
I do not know how many parcels it's involved.
This is the, we're talking about the Omi Trust.
Yes. Are you looking at the map?
Yeah.
This is embarrassing, but I'm unable to get onto the map right now. My connection's not working.
So are they selling all of that Omi Trust land? Is that what's on the table, or is it one of the three parcels?
I can't answer that question. I don't know.
Let me see that.
I don't know that it's all of the land that they have available.
Well, does the map indicate how much land we're talking about?
Lot. So there's about 1 acre of that that is flat and would be considered buildable. The rest of it is really a buffer coming up Olney Gardens Road, and it wraps around Olney and its hillside.
Oh, so really only 1 acre is developable. The balance of it is undevelopable. Oh. Okay, $40,000 an acre for that undevelopable land.
Well, I wouldn't call it undevelopable. You can build on anything. Depends on how much engineering you want to spend.
Yeah, I moved from California. I know what they do down there.
So it's just, there's probably 1 acre that without mitigation would be ripe for development. The rest of it is developable. It's just going to be more difficult.
Right. Lots of skills. Okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
Okay, we got it. That answered the question. Okay, I'll let him know. Thanks, bye. Okay, the purchase also does include just under 4 shares of irrigation that comes with that, with the property.
Okay.
Which that alone is worth its weight on paper. Irrigation shares and water rights are expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, because really when you talk about it, it has 4 shares, but really that is somewhere in excess of the 1 acre that can develop a board. It would probably be irrigated. The rest of it is in the buffer. They have to be able to irrigate that. So it has to be a little bit of water supply available to all the gardens. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now we're getting more information.
Okay. Sorry, I had to call somebody. I was getting the information as I was talking to you. Thanks for your patience.
This is Carl Long again. So you're proposing $400,000 for the land purchase, and you're adding in 2020 $400,000 from the capital improvement review fund. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you're saying that money is already available?
That's correct. And Jim?
Yeah, I said aye.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, it sounds like that motion has passed. All right, so a question for our executive director there. Are we doing anything else at this meeting?
We are. There is a B there, hearing for text amendments to the Chelan County Code Flood Hazard Development. I received an email from Jason Dietemar, and they also are on half staff or less in Public Works, and he has requested that this hearing for the Flood Hazard Development chapter be postponed to a date certain and time certain, to be April 22nd, so your next regular meeting at 7 p.m. And if we do that to a date and time certain, we do not have to re-advertise for it.
Okay, very good, but I think we need to make that 6 p.m., please, if not.
No, in April we switch back to 7 o'clock.
Okay, April we switch back to 7. Okay, very good. Okay, is there any discussion from any of the members?
Okay.
This is George McDevitt. Did we have a workshop on this item? I don't remember the date previously.
That's the first time. No, we did not have a workshop on this.
Okay. I wonder if there'd be value in that. There were quite a few changes to the code. Maybe it can only be discussed in a hearing, but it seems pretty comprehensive.
So this is actually a title we don't typically bring to the Planning Commission, the consultant will be available when we do have the hearing to go through and discuss all of that, all the proposed changes. So I think the preference would be to hold the hearing and work through any of your questions during that time with the public.
You can also, at your public hearing, you can continue it for additional testimony and additional information at that time. So you don't have to hold it all in one evening.
Jim Brown is his name. He comes to us from Fish and Wildlife.
Okay.
Washington State.
What is the background of planning?
Well, that's a good question.
I may be doing some transitional work until we look at the planning component of it.
Yeah, he's done a lot. I'm not a planner myself, so I have a hard time answering that question. But he's a regional director and has done a lot of different work with both our community development and with a lot of the lands issues that come out of natural resources. So,
and I will probably be on his hip for a while, and so you guys will really like him. I mean, he's going to be a good fit.
What are the qualities he has that attracted you guys to seeking? In other words, with that qualities he has, how is he going to address those problems? What qualities does he have?
I think the main quality that he has is great leadership. He is not afraid to sort of jump in and tackle issues. And he's a good consensus builder, is another, I think, good quality that he has. But he's just generally not one that says, staff, take care of this, and I'll just sort of rubber stamp things. I mean, he likes to get to know issues and figure things out. So I think that was probably his main selling point to the commission.
He's going to be very engaged.
This is Carl Blum. Just out of curiosity, do you know, does he have any land use and planning licenses, degrees, pedigree, anything like that?
No, not that I'm aware of. No.
He has worked with a lot of environmental documents.
We did not advertise the position. We basically headhunted, and just from who we knew that was that may be available, that had the skills we were looking for.
I've known that. No partnership. He's been involved since the very beginning of that organization 12 years ago, and pretty well versed in what's going on in the Snow Basin, and in terms of the wildlife and the planning and the things going on there. So he's been involved in that area.
And so what department is he currently with?
Washington State Fish and Wildlife. He's the North Central Washington Regional Director.
Okay. Well, obviously, my only concern would be, does he bring with him any anti-growth prejudices as far as development within the county? Because, needless to say, we need development within the county, we need additional housing, we need additional sources of tax revenue. Being from that state of mind, and I'm only presuming, does he bring any anti-growth or slow growth prejudices to the position?
No, I don't believe he would.
Okay. Well, the thing about it is, the decision's already been made, so I guess we'll all find out.
That's true.
facilitators, we are not regulators. So that's what I've been doing. What?
Increased efficiency, improved customer service, the last one.
And looking at the operational need. So basically looking at our processes.
Okay.
Making sure that we're being fiscally responsible.
Where have you found problems?
You know, I think anytime you go into an organization, it's just looking for little areas where efficiencies. I mean, from things like making sure that the notices that we send to the newspaper are not only accurate, but they're as brief as they can be and be, completely thorough to minimize the cost. Just looking at every kind of little thing to make sure that we're being efficient, especially going into the economy we're probably going to have in the next year.
Right.
But
one of the problems is,
I hear what you're saying, and I agree with much of it, but I almost have to object to the position that you're not regulated. In the result, you're not always regulated. There's certainly short regulation. And if you're going to get my attention, you're going to get my attention.
Facilitators and not regulators. What I'm referring to is when we are working on land use applications and building permit applications, that we're working with our customers to see, you know, we have regulations and guidelines that we need to look at for compliance. But our job is not to stand there and say no, it's to be a facilitator and say, you know what, these are the sideboards we have to stay within. How do we get you there? But I agree.
Well, that's good because I know that I've heard complaints in the past that Chelan County took forever to review projects, to approve projects, to get things going, and it's been very exasperating for developers. And it sounds like to me that you're acknowledging that issue and trying to resolve it. Am I correct?
You are correct, and I've spent actually a tremendous amount of time in the last couple of weeks with the planners bringing to me and the building permit techs bringing to me projects, and I bet I've signed off administratively 20 or 25 projects in the last 2 weeks. I'm really, really focused on making sure that the review time, once those staff reports and those administrative decisions are prepared, that the review time is minimal. I don't want to cause delays for any projects or any buildings because of my review. So I am really concentrating on making sure that I get right on those and that there's a quick turnaround. If they give them to me this afternoon, I will review them tonight and the planners will have them back in the morning for issuance. Or corrections.
Wow. That's impressive.
I'm a doer. I do not sit around.
I like that.
Although it's wearing me out, I'm going to be happy to go back over to my assessor's office.
Kurt, how is this impacting you? Do you feel good about it?
Yeah. I think it's been making a lot of positive changes, and one thing I was going to add that you guys will be seeing shortly is that we're going to be bringing forward a series of limited text amendments to help to start cleaning up the decision-making process and actually even help with some code enforcement just by giving them a better language to work with. So
yeah, and that. That is one thing that we started talking about as soon as I came on board, was how to use the sideboards in our code right now on text amendments, and how many of the little ones that we've been just kind of dinking around with for years, looking at, for an example, a yurt. We now have a method through the building codes to have some criteria for yurts, whereas we haven't allowed them, but they're all over the county. So let's look at how we can address this. So we're going to be bringing to you a whole slew of small little text amendments that are going to make a huge difference in processing and how we address these issues in the future. But we don't want to waste any time. So we want to get those out for review, and during the 60-day comment period for Department of Commerce, we're going to move forward and do the CEPA review and do the public hearings, so that when that 60-day comment period is up, we're ready to adopt. We're moving forward here. We're not dragging our feet. We're not letting grass grow under us. We're making progress.
You sound like Mark Botello.
Well, I had lunch with Mark a couple weeks ago. He gets that from me, just so you know.
Sorry, this is Ryan. I'm sorry I joined late.
Hi, Ryan.
Is there any information on the radius milestone for the chiller?
There is.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Kirsten.
Examination. information? Is that where we are right now on that?
They just provide comments during that process. The only thing, if the state wanted to, if they disagree with the findings of the commissioners, then they would appeal it through a land use petition act. So.
Has that happened on that proposal?
No.
Okay.
I have not heard anything from the state indicating that that would happen.
Okay.
And everything like that, so.
Okay, and then the approval that we gave for the project, which north of Enneah, Rubencliff had made a proposal there to develop the property on the east side of 97A along the river into building lots and what have you. Has that gone through the process of basically now just up to the owner to submit his plan?
So the map fees that we looked at last year have all gone through, and I'm not aware that any actual like development projects have come through.
Is that John McQuaig's property?
Yeah.
Okay, Rubencliff Orchards. Yeah, I know where that is.
Okay, so. Just clarify that. So basically, no action taken because he hasn't submitted anything. But that's
where
we hold up on that.
Yeah, he hasn't moved anything yet for that property.
Okay, and in Indiana, how many more permits or applications are we still backlogged on?
Actually, for land use or building? For land use?
Yes.
Okay, so today I was talking to Emily, and she actually was going and getting files from two of the planners that are on standby and out of the office now, because she is totally caught up. She is just waiting for comment periods to expire so she can move forward. So I would suspect we're going to be pretty darn caught up, and I'm trying to put processes in place so that we're meeting deadlines and not having applications that are a year old, 2 years old.
Oh, that's excellent. How many of them are there, do you know?
I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay. That's curious.
There's quite a few in process as I'm looking. I think we've probably gotten 20 or 25 out the door. And the project list was one planner had almost 90, one had 55, and one had 68 at the time. So there's still quite a few in processing, but they're at different points in comment periods, some waiting for hearings, some waiting for additional information, so.
Okay. But you're moving forward.
We are moving forward.
I like it.
I'm really concerned about enforcement, and it sounds like you're doing everything you can to get operations going, which is great, but you've got the people that are going through all the hoops that you go through for getting permitting and all that, and you've still got the people that haven't done anything that have got away with it. It just isn't fair.
We're working on a plan to, because code enforcement is so expansive right now, and there's 800 to 900 backlogged files and complaints continuing to come in that they need to look at. We definitely are looking for a process that's going to help us. I'm trying to put together a plan. I just don't have details for you right now, but I am looking at that.
That's really important to us, and again, that in addition to the marijuana thing, in addition to all the maximum.
Sure.
You know.
Yes, I am cognizant of the pressure that's on code enforcement and the need for it.
Okay, thank you.
Are a lot of the complaints still concerning vacation rentals?
Well, right now they are.
Yeah.
We're getting calls and emails and letters just hand over fist here about the vacation rentals, and right now it's being prompted because of the stay-at-home order and people aren't staying at home and the potential overburdening of our existing facilities when we have communities that are, that our hospital facilities are probably currently undersized for, and then having those additional people here. It definitely causes concern. I'm not sure how the commissioners are going to propose to take care of that.
Well, especially when you consider that probably a lot of those people are from the west side where the plague is running wild, and they're coming over here saying, how do you like me so far?
Yeah, well, and it's probably tough. They're cooped up at home with kids out of school and non-essential workers at home, and they're like, hey, let's go over to Lake Chelan and spend a week over there, out of harm's way, and it probably doesn't even occur to them that they're bringing harm our way.
Well, this is Carl Bonner. Not only that, and we have a tremendous concern here in the Lake Chelan area, the police just have an outcry on Coastal Radio and other outlets for that, but the cleaning staff isn't cleaning any more these homes than they were in the past, so there's no guarantee that anything is properly. The real answer is the commissioners need to put a moratorium on all vacation rentals, even operating for at least 30 days, if not 90 days. And if you get a chance to suggest something like that, please feel free to do so.
Well, I can give you all three of their phone numbers. I'm sure they'd love to hear from you.
They're getting a letter from my wife and I.
Well, they're getting lots of letters, so. And they're reading all of them.
They sent out a letter. This is Kathy Mulhall. They actually are sending out a letter to the Vacation Rental Association and as many folks that signed up on the listserv to be aware of what's going on with vacation rentals. They're sending out basically a plea for them to stop business, asking them to be responsible business owners and to not recruit and entertain folks here in their vacation rentals. The issue that's probably the biggest issue that they have is that even if they say, yep, no vacation rentals, we have no enforcement mechanism in place.
Right.
And no ability to enforce an order such as that. So you get voluntary compliance, and we're hoping for that same voluntary compliance through just a general request to be good citizens. Test of self-compliance, which
right.
is what they've asked for all along, saying that they know how to be good neighbors and be self-compliant. So this is a good time for them to test that theory.
Exactly right. And regarding this, regarding code enforcement for the end, one of the problems up here with the case around the Manson EPA is the only that has rules regarding vacation rentals. If you must have an approved application, the Manson Community Council encountered something like, I think, 60 some that have been gone through the process properly. And in just anecdotal evidence, when they looked at the various websites, they've come up with something like over 150 vacation rental advertisements. So we know there's a lot of people here that aren't following the code, but part of that is because they either don't know or they don't want to, and there's no way to enforce that. And that's part of our code enforcement problem.
And that's something that probably should be addressed when you're looking at that workshop and the documents that are going to come to you from our consultant. Regarding the vacation short-term rentals also. So that's one of those components that you're going to need to look at.
But why would we be enforcing it now? Those are already in place.
they're out of compliance now, is what he's suggesting.
Yeah, I don't know that we don't have compliance actions currently going on them. I'm going to be honest, the 800 to 900 backlog cases, I've asked for a kind of an itemized list so I can tell exactly what they are. To date, I haven't had time to sit down with Angel, the code enforcement manager, and go through that list, but it's on my schedule to do so that I can see how many we've got. And I know that we don't currently do proactive, kind of go out and look for items. We just don't have the staff to do that right now.
No, I understand. And I get back to the total code enforcement that there isn't enough staff. I agree 100% with that.
Well, we may need to look at other ways and maybe amending our code. The process right now is so cumbersome to bring somebody into compliance that it just doesn't help.
Okay. Well, the problem with the self-enforcement people, these people were asking for it. I mean, if you've got people that, if they're out there advertising to rent out homes or rent out establishments or places for people to stay, well, they certainly don't qualify as an essential part of the economy. So they're in violation of the governor's order right there, aren't they not?
Well, the governor's orders does allow hotels and motels and those types of workers and establishments to stay open.
Oh, so they would fall into that.
Yeah.
Well, I think that what they're trying to do is protect those individuals and give them a place to go if they are visiting essential public workers, like hospital workers, or we bring in extra fire crew or stuff like that, so that we have a place to put them. And I don't know how the governor is going to distinguish between the two.
Yeah, his order was a little vague.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, do we have any
the motion?
Greg Becker.
Greg, and then Jordan, you
Greg
second?
Greg Becker, second.
Got it.
Well, Deanna, keep up the good work.
I'm trying.
I want to thank you.